And we are live. Welcome, folks, to episode 3468 of the Survival Podcast. And today we're going to talk about how at risk the United States is as a nation, from a standpoint of our infrastructure and from just a standpoint of our place in the world. We are referencing in that discussion what happened last night, and that is that a 1,200-foot span of an 8,600-foot-long bridge collapsed into the harbor in Baltimore, actually into the river, but it doesn't really matter. It's down, and it shut down shipping in and out of Baltimore Harbor, which is one of the most active harbors in the country, and certainly the most active harbor in the eastern United States, at least to my knowledge. And I'll tell you more about what goes through that harbor and what comes in and out of the country from that harbor in a bit. But here's what I want to start out with. I've been thinking about doing a show just like this for a few weeks. It probably would have happened like Monday or Tuesday next week had this not occurred. Translation, I'm not doing it because this occurred. And I want to come out of the gate with something that needs to be said right now to the special children out there, that everything's a false flag and everything's a WEF and everything's the New World Order. My special learners, my shrieking friends that believe every single conspiracy theory that ever was spouted by anyone ever, including things like the orphan trains and things like that, if you want to look that nonsense, the great mud floods of the 1700s that they have no evidence for, all of this bullshit. We don't know what happened. We don't know. This is not cut and dry like when the U.S. said Putin blew up his own pipeline. That was pretty obvious. And what I would like everybody to do right now, and, you know, we'll get into an F word really quick here, but is shut the fuck up till you know something. Because you don't know anything. And these people that talk like they know things before you know anything need to be disregarded. Even if they end up being right, there's a point at which you actually say you know a thing. There's a place where you speculate on a thing, and there's a place where you realize you don't know anything. There's video of what happened. A ship lost power. It had issues with steering. And people are like, well, how could that happen? I don't know. Do you know what it takes to steer a cargo ship in current? Do you? Because I'll be honest, I don't. But having run small boats, and when I say small, I mean up into like the mid-30-foot up to close to 40-foot boats in my life, I can tell you that things go wrong. And there's an awful lot of kinetic energy there. So it is possible that what happened is exactly what it looked like. There was a power failure and an incompetent crew, and they ran a boat into a pylon that holds up a big bridge, and then the whole bridge fell down. I'm more concerned about the fact that the bridge fell down that easily. When you watch it happen, if you've been under a rock or something and haven't seen it yet, and something you need to know about the footage is being circulated, these ships move incredibly slow. The footage you're seeing, that ship, its movement is actually sped up so that you don't have to sit there as long as you did, as you would, and wait for it to happen. So the ship is moving faster on the film than it actually was moving in real time. That's kind of an important little thing to know. But what this makes me wonder is how many bridges like this that are critical, because again, when we get into the main body of the show today after the sponsor segment, I'm going to tell you what that port handles for this country and how much traffic crosses that bridge. And I'm going to point something out that I think a lot of people have a hard time getting their heads around. When you lose a bridge, you can lose a bridge that, like, well, it sucks, but, like, go 5 miles that way and there's another bridge. Or you can lose a bridge in a place where it is a long way around through a lot of convoluted shit, and you can add, even, you know, as the crow flies, it's not that far, but 25, 50, 75 miles, and you can funnel tens of thousands of vehicles daily through a thoroughfare that doesn't have enough room for them. And that's what's going on here. But what else could happen? Could happen. And again, I want to speak to the special learners real quick here about all the conspiracy theories and shit. There are people, I believe, that are this mentally fucked up. If they would have been on that bridge at 1:30 in the morning last night, sitting in their car in one of the vehicles that plunged into the harbor, what a horrible thing. So I'm not making light of it. But I really believe they're this mentally defective. And there was a guy in a vehicle next to them. They would have been rolling the window down, screaming at the guy, plunging into the water with him. It was the NWO! It's the New World Order! It's the WEF, man! And a guy in the other car is going, I'm just trying not to die. We can worry about who did it later. Right now, can we talk about the problem? And kind of that's where I'm coming at today. It doesn't matter if it's Houthi terrorists. It doesn't matter if it's your own government. It doesn't matter if it's some foreign actor. It doesn't matter if it's terrorists coming across the border. It matters that it's this freaking easy for it to happen. Now, you might think, Jack, how easy is it really to take over a giant, huge, multi-hundred foot long container ship and crash it into a bridge pylon? I would suggest to you that probably not as hard as you would think. And there are other ways to attack what you would call the soft underbelly than this. And that's what we're going to talk about today. How at risk we are, how little that we have done from a civil defense standpoint to prepare for any of it, and how much of what we have is ready to fall apart even if nobody does anything. And how we are hell-bent on the idea that every problem can be solved with more money, with no concern about what the money actually does to fix the problem. If we spend enough money on something, hey, we funded it. You funded it to do what? The border bill is a classic example of that. The border bill that wasn't. We're going to give $6 billion to the border to close the border, right? Oh, no. So we have more judges to process more illegal entrants faster into the country. Yeah, I wouldn't give you money for that. Oh, and by the way, the border gets $6 billion to do that, and Ukraine gets $60 billion. And then they just backdoored like $130 billion to Ukraine in the minibus, which is not mini, right? They call it a minibus because usually these giant bills are like $3 trillion, and this was $1 trillion. I don't know where I'm from, folks. Fucking $1 trillion is real money. We're starting to catch. I call that Omni. I call that a big deal, right? So all this crazy shit's going on, and we have our special children that are shrieking about who's doing it. What we need to focus on, and what I want to focus on today, is less who's doing it, but the fact that there are a lot of who's who would want to do it that have an awful lot of rich targets, and we're going to talk about those, and then we'll end with, well, what the hell should we do? Because we ain't going to fix it. Now, I had a special learner today on Twitter. And I was, just before I even knew this happened, I was talking about the border. And I said, you know, people get on me because I'm an anarchist. You're like, you're supposed to be for open borders. I'm like, well, get rid of the corporate welfare, the personal welfare, all of these programs, all of this money that we just throw at people for existing. All these social welfare programs. Stop making it where it's really easy to be a lazy fuck that doesn't work. Stop handing out our money. Stop taking my grandchildren's inheritance and giving it to people who don't do anything for us. And on for all the open borders you want. Some special learner shows up and he says, well, focusing on just the physical border instead of all the other problems is a fool's errand. Hey, you know what we could do? I'm just saying, with the capabilities we have right now, if we wanted to, we could seal up the southern border like that fucking fast. How long do you think it's going to take to deconstruct the welfare state? We're not going to. Until it's going to collapse on its own. It's going to collapse on its own. The question is, will there be anything worth left rebuilding here when it does? That's my point today. That's where I'm coming on it. So if anybody here is really upset that I'm not worried about which particular, you know, group of Dr. Evil level world takeover people did a thing that you have no idea if anybody did that at all. This could just be an accident. I don't give a shit. You're missing the actual problem. Again, you're the person, you're in a building on the third floor. There's fire on the fourth floor and the second floor and smoke's coming in. And you want to have a discussion with the guy trying to climb down the fire escape about who set the building on fire. There's a point where you go, okay, whatever, dude, goodbye. Burn your ass up while you have a discussion with your friends. You got to get out of the way, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. What's wrong and what to do about it. Before we do, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day. Sponsor of the day number one today is Fortress Canine, which is or I'm sorry, Canine Academy, which comes from Joel Riles, who also has Fortress Canine. Joel has been training protection dogs for a very long time. He has amazing dogs available at Fortress Canine, but Canine Academy, you learn how to train yourself so that you can train your dogs to be great dogs. I had a big part of helping Joel put this program together and formulating how it would all roll out. There are great courses you can take. The annual membership gives you continuously updated things. There's a monthly membership that does that as well. But for $89 one-time cost, you can take the Canine Academy Basics course. I recommend everybody do at least that. And I'll tell you why. Whatever you want from your dogs, it all starts with core obedience basics and learning how to condition the response you're looking for in that core obedience. You want a dog that will point birds for you in the field while you're hunting birds, then you need core obedience. You want a dog that will protect you and your family, you need core obedience. You want a dog that's just a good homestead dog, will hang out with your kids, not bite anybody when they come over, and not eat your chickens? Guess what you need? Core obedience. You start to see how that works. Core obedience is where everything else comes from. So I recommend you check out canineacademy.us and find the course that you need to make your life with your dogs even better, because we all know life is better with dogs in it. Next up today is Start 9, and since they have this great little video here that I can use for their sponsor segment, I am going to go ahead and play that for you instead of talking myself.
We all save our data, but where is it saved? In the cloud, which is actually this building in one of these computers with millions of others. This is called a honeypot, a single place full of data worth a hacker's time to steal. But instead, if you saved your data on your own computer at home, you wouldn't be worth the attack. Saving your own data is easy. Simply plug in a Start9 device and start saving all your own data today. So, will you stay in the honeypot? Or will you take control of your data? Start now. Start 9.
The one little addition I want to do on Start 9 there is, I just know when people see something like this, they're like, I don't know if I can do all that high-tech stuff. Can you install apps on your phone and use them? Yeah? Okay. Then you can do this. There might be a little bit of learning curve to it, but you can do this. I also talked to Jesse Markowitz recently, and this is way out, and you totally shouldn't wait just for this, if you are going to be here. But I have already agreed with Jesse that we are going to have him as one of the presenters at the TSP workshop in 2024 in the fall, which should be 99% should be the week of November 11th, because that's just usually when we do it, this fall at TSP Workshop and Nine Mile Farm. So we will be talking more about that in the future. With that, let's go ahead and get on into this, and let's just start off again with what happened, and let's get a little bit of an understanding about how this is probably a bigger deal than people seem to think it is. And I want to say, I bet you, so this bridge is called the Francis Scott Key Bridge. And I bet there's some other special learners, not the conspiracy theorist ones, but the ones who would call you comrade and tell you workers of the world unite and other nonsensical bullshit like that, that are like, woohoo, it collapsed, it should collapse. It's like tearing down a statue, you know, man. Francis Scott Key, man, he was a colonizer and what have you. And okay, well, those people are going to feel a little bit different when they find out that there's no freaking avocado toast at Starbucks in Baltimore. Okay? You're not going to feel so good about this here in a couple weeks. I want to read this to you. What the Port of Baltimore actually has come in and out of it. It's one of the busiest ports in the United States, handling a variety of goods due to its excellent facilities and strategic location. Here's some key categories. Roll-on, roll-off cargo is renowned for the handling of automobiles and other types of roll-on, roll-off cargo. It's one of the leading ports in the U.S. for automotive shipping, dealing with cars, trucks, and heavy machinery. Yeah, we were looking for a new Toyota recently. There's no cars on the lot already. I'm sure this will help things. Containers. A significant volume of containerized cargo passes through the port, encompassing a wide array of goods such as electronics, clothes, furniture, food products. pretty much everything that's not a car ships in a freaking container today. Bulk commodities, including coal, iron ore, and grain. We don't need that. You know, that's dirty fossil fuel stuff. Break bulk and project cargo includes oversized heavy items that cannot be transported in standard shipping containers, such as construction equipment, industrial components and large machinery, liquid and chemicals, including petroleum products and liquefied natural gas. Well, that's icky. That's icky. We don't need natural gas, says the person who will freeze to death without it. Consumer goods and retail items, food and agricultural products, and a bunch of other shit. Right now, the port of Baltimore is shut down. No ships in, no ships out. Now, the way that's being reported is a little bit sensational because that's what the media does. So let me tell you what this actually means. No ships in or out. People that work there can still go there and work. The ships that are there with cargo on them are being unloaded. And the ships that are there with cargo to be loaded will be loaded and they will be delayed in their departure. They do not have to fix the bridge to reopen the port the way that some are inferring, especially some of the special people on both sides of the special people universe, okay? But it will not be... I guarantee you there are people who work there that, you know, just to get to work now, their commute just went up by an hour and a half to get to work. Just as one example. Vehicles can still get in and out of the port. They're still doing that. But now, like, the 695 corridor, like, if you were heading south... That's where you would have went, like the whole freaking east coast of the United States. And we're not going to fix that bridge anytime soon. I'm going to get rid of somebody here. I'm just done. Somebody's in here mouthing off to the other people. I don't even know what it's about. Don't even care. I'm not having somebody jump into this and start mouthing people off. I'm just not going to do it. Anyway, This is a significant issue, but how long do you think it's going to take to fix this? I'm not talking about reopening the port. I would say if they really, 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 really want to, they can clear out enough of the bridge, you know, probably in a week or three, to start moving ships now. How long is it taking to put a new bridge over? Well, the mayor of Baltimore has already said it's going to be a long-term project. I'm sure he's got buddies lined up to grift the shit out of it. It takes us forever to do anything in this country at this point. How long did it take us to build a building after 9/11? To put a new building in? It took us longer than it took to build the original first two World Trade Center buildings. We built those in the 70s. And we can't build a building today without 47,000 people lining up to grift their piece of bullshit out of it, let alone a bridge. This is how many environmentalists are going to get involved and say the bridge is going to destroy the life of a turtle. Like, this is a long-term problem. ID Crisis Design says DeSantis could do it in 2 weeks. Bullshit. Don't equate the Sanibel Causeway, okay, with the Francis Scott Key Bridge. I was really impressed with what Florida did to reestablish the link to Sanibel Island. But it is nothing like replacing the freaking the Key Bridge. Nothing. It's not even, it's so divorced from each other. It's like saying because somebody was able to fold cardboard into a box, they can build a space shuttle. It's that divorced. And I might know a little bit about this because I've been going to Sanibel Island since I was 8 years old, and it's one of my favorite places on Earth. And K-Bonk brings something else up. Steel is the problem. Where are you going to get the steel? The Sanibel Causeway is built primarily of concrete, not steel. You get a suspension bridge. There's a piece of the causeway that was a suspension piece, so boats could get under it. That's when they got rid of the drawbridge about a decade and a half, 2 decades ago, and they put in one with an arch. But it's not the same thing. It's not the same thing. And this isn't going to get fixed. And let's just talk about what we're talking about. We're talking about a 1,200-foot span is what came down. That's what, a quarter mile? A quarter mile. Boof. The whole bridge itself, you know, it's probably going to be the case that they're like, well, we can't just rebuild the middle. We have to put a whole new bridge in. We could start from scratch. That's what they'll do. Even if they don't have to, that's what they'll do. The bridge itself, 8,600 feet. It's about a mile and a half. Just down for me, they're improving. There's no disaster. They're improving the state highway and the bridges and all. It's been going 4 years. They're nowhere near close to done. I mean, they took half the land that my veterinarian owned in, what do they call it, where they seize your land. What do they call that again? You guys know what I'm talking about, where they take your land. I don't know why the word went out of my head, where the state just takes your land in the name of the common good. Civil asset forfeiture is not what it is, and it's in my head. But you guys know what I'm talking about. Eminent domain. That's what it is, eminent domain. So they did that, but they're still nowhere near close to done. You can't even tell what it's going to look like 4 years for something way simpler than this. This is a long-term problem. How does this affect people and traffic in the area? The number of vehicles that cross that bridge per day. 31,500 vehicles a day cross the bridge. Did now have to go somewhere else. And it was not the kind of bridge you drove across because you felt like it. It wasn't like, hey, you know what I did today? I'm going to drive over there just because I got nothing else to do. Like, you had to be wanting to go somewhere. You're either a long-haul trucker or a long-haul driver on vacation or something like that, you know, heading from the north to the south or south to the north, or you had business to do in the area. And it's about 50 to 75 miles around when you look at all the rigmarole that's necessary because that bridge is gone now. And again, the infrastructure that's there is not designed for 31,000 more vehicles a day to utilize it. They're going to have to redirect some of the ports receiving just because of the vehicular traffic that will be fucked up for years now, if not a decade. I would not be surprised if it takes a decade to put a bridge in. And anybody here want to tell me that you would? I'm not saying it will. I'm saying it won't surprise me if it does. That reaches 11.5 million vehicles a year. 11.5 million. And many of them, again, special people, they were bringing you your avocado toast. Or the avocados for your toast. Or the grain so the baker could make your bread for your avocado toast and your coffee. So you could bitch about not having any money and go spend $11 a day for a couple egg bites, some avocado toast, and a coffee at Starbucks. This is a problem bigger than that, though. Again, heavy equipment, farm machinery, construction equipment. The equipment that you would use to build the bridge, normally it would come in to the Baltimore Harbor in that part of the country. You see how this could be a problem. But I want to point out, this is a much bigger issue than this bridge. And what will happen now is the idiots that run our media programming will convince you that the bridge is the problem. The bridge is the problem. The right will say it's Pete Buttigieg's fault, right? And the left will say it's the Republicans' fault for not funding more infrastructure. That's what they'll do. Let me ask you a crazy question. Just a crazy question. How many bridges could be taken out this way, and how many could be taken out far more easily? Again, I think an armed team of about six people that knew what they were doing could take over one of these container ships like that. They're not that heavily secured. So if you did have a bunch of Chechenian rebels or something that wanted to take out a bridge, probably the softest way to do it would be wait till one of these ships are on their way, board the ship, put guns in everybody's face, and steer it into the bridge. That's still complicated. There's a lot of smaller bridges that are way more vulnerable than this. That something like, oh, I don't know, a Ryder truck full of fertilizer and diesel fuel could screw up. And there's other ways. I don't want to get into exactly how to do this. I just want to point out that there are all kinds of places throughout this country that are major trucking thoroughfares that if you take out a bridge or two, the inconvenience is beyond the understanding of the typical micro-brained American today. Those of you, I know I have a huge audience in Tennessee. I-40. Do I have to say anything else? What happens when you're on I-40, westbound, and there's a traffic jam and you try to get around that one big bridge that goes across the gorge? what happens? It's like 30 miles out of the way, and it's 30 miles of back roads north to find the one little last bridge that you can get across and come back down the highway. And it still will save you time if it's bad enough in that particular area. Some of you know exactly what I'm talking about. So how many more bridges could be jacked up this way? Der Tuffel Flanders is mentioning tunnels. 95 tunnels are right next to the bridge. It will be slower, but not 90 minutes. This is a big problem, guys. What about the tunnels? How hard is it to jack up a tunnel? How hard is it to jack up a tunnel? Forrest says, landlocked Idaho can be completely disabled. We have east to west and north-south major routes. Yeah, all it takes is a gorge. All it takes is anything that goes across. There's a lot of other things that could happen that I'm not going to talk about today. I don't want to be giving people ideas. But I mean, just to throw out one of them, a few gunmen and a few people driving vehicles that simply abandon their vehicles in the middle of a road and walk away and have crossfire from, you know, raised medians on both sides of a highway. How much damage could that do? And we have no plan for any of this. None. We have no preparedness plan as a country. How easy is it to, let's go a different way. How easy is it to start riots in this country? Think about all the, whoever you think is the entity looking for the vector of attack. If you believe it's Islamists, okay. If you believe it's the New World Order, okay. If you believe it's Putin, okay. I don't even care who you think the threat comes from. Let's say that it's China. I don't care. You want to take out America. What is the first thing I would do if I didn't want to use a direct military attack that made it obvious who was behind it? I would start riots all over this country. All you have to do is any given day, you can find one thing that happened, and you can use it if you want to gin up a riot. And once one riot kicks off, what happens? They start spreading all over. The left loves to riot. Why? Because we let them get away with it. We have the right has one riot in 50 years. And it's worse than 9/11 and Pearl Harbor combined. But the left went on a rampage for 120 days in the BLM riots, and nobody literally did shit about it. So the left loves to riot. This is a good time to talk about something that's going to seem a little bit off base. But if you ever read the book, you'll understand what I'm talking about. The Illuminatus Trilogy by Robert Shea and Robert Anton Wilson. It's three books in one. It's really long, and it's weird. There are definitely parts of it that are not based in reality fact at all. They're like science fiction, lunatic stuff. And there's parts of it where you're like, the dude that wrote this chapter, whichever one of the Roberts it was clearly on acid when he did it. But there's a larger true story with it. And every conspiracy theory you've ever heard up till about 1990 is in this. And a ton of stuff that was done, like TV, movies and stuff. Like there was a TV show where there was a talking dolphin in a submarine. Like that's right out of this book. But in the book, this is the true part, there's all these organizations, and most of them are made-up names. But when you read it, you're like, oh, I know who they're talking about there. I know what organization that is, right? And they're diametrically opposed, at least they think they are. There's right-wing kind of libertarian organizations, and then over here you got left-wing lunatic organizations, and then you got kind of your center right that want to dominate the world and tell everybody morally how to live. And you have all three of these dynamics interplaying. And there's, you know, hundreds of organizations that all think they're fighting for their side. But in the end, a very small cabal is actually using them all. They're all being used. They're all useful idiots. They're all useful idiots. And the higher people rise, the more they understand this. That is absolutely spot on to what's going on in the world today. So if I want to harm another nation, I have all these useful idiot organizations that I can just flick and cause a ripple effect to occur. And so the first thing I would do if I was a foreign adversary or even a domestic adversary and I really wanted to cause complete disruption in the United States is I'd kick riots off everywhere. And think about it. It's not even hard to do. One dude gets choked to death in Minneapolis and half the country sets its major cities on fire. Yeah. Okay. Then, how vulnerable are we to fires from arson from a determined force? Look what's happened in West Texas, and everybody's like, they're trying to put cattle people out of business. No, they're not. It's just fires. That's what happened in West Texas, these fires. They happen all the time. We have grass fires out there in dry times of the year. We didn't get a lot of rain out there, even though this part of Texas is kind of out of the drought now. We've got a lot of rain. Where those fires occurred, it was just dry as a bone. But yeah, if you want to start grass fires, that's easy. You know, about 4 ounces of gasoline, a bottle, and a rag, and you can cause a fire that'll take out thousands or hundreds of thousands, maybe, of acres of land, depending on where you do it. But what about a determined, coordinated force? Let's say, I don't know, 2-3 dozen people that were all starting fires at the same time in a coordinated effort. And some of them were fires like forest fires and stuff, but some of them were fires like in cities and towns, especially in vulnerable older parts of the places where like fire suppression systems haven't been corrected. That might be a problem. Now, if I was really like trying to be super evil, Dr. Evil Genius, I would say, why don't we start a whole shitload of fires in all the wilderness areas so that all the major fire departments send help? And then once all the help is sent, then we'll start the fires in the cities and the towns. And then we'll start rumors that this side did it to this side and start riots on top of the other riots. Again, we have no plan for any of this. And if you leave out the open border, you're missing massive potential vectors of attack. Again, I don't care who's actually calling the shots. I care that you make the target easy. This is a problem. So even if it is a WEF, why wouldn't they use Islamic extremism to push their goal? Why wouldn't they do that? I mean, look what just happened in Russia with that terror attack. Putin says it was Islamists, radical Islamists did it. Putin says that. He also says Ukraine probably was culpable in it. And people are like, oh, no, it was Ukraine. Both things can be true. If you stop acting like a child for 5 minutes and being attached to your narrative, then you can see that your narrative can coexist with other narratives. That if I am this evil bastard and I know that I can manipulate this group into doing my bidding, even if I don't like them, then what better way to do things? What better way to do things than take people who are pissed off and hate a given entity and point them in that direction and enable them to do it and step back and go, oh no, man, it was right. Like, and then the southern border is just wide open. This shit about refugees. How do you get a refugee from China into the United States via Mexico and call them a refugee? That just ignores every single piece of law, common law, as it relates to what a refugee is. How do you have refugees coming into the United States via the southern border from Central Africa? They're actual refugees. Like, that's not how refugees work. This has to be on some level coordinated. For all my, you know, beating up on people like the Alex Jones crowd and all, I agree that there is a coordination here. But my problem is how open we are to the attack and how stupid we are about letting this continue to happen. And we are. I mean, and then you look at things like a weaponized justice system. You want to piss some people off and you really want to get control of a country, piss off the people who have the guns. And I know there's a whole bunch of you that like read Patriots and pleasure yourself to it or whatever, but it won't work out that way. Look what they were able to do with January 6th, which was basically, compared to a lot of other riots, a nothing burger. I'm not saying the whole thing was nothing, but compared to like what happened in Kenosha, the fiery but peaceful, it was nothing. People walking around, being led around by Capitol Police, then it's worse than Pearl Harbor and 9/11 put together. But if you got the right pissed off, and let's say even a couple dozen armed guys tried to do something anywhere, imagine what they could do with that based on what they did with, you know, a guy with assless chaps sitting at Nancy Pelosi's desk and carrying a flag. Imagine what, you don't think they want that? Of course they want that. How easy is it to cause widespread electrical failures? Everybody's talking about cyber this and cyber that. And I'm not saying that's not an issue, but if I really want to start shutting down electrical systems in this country, it's pretty easy. You know those things that look like a garbage can hanging off a pole? Yeah, those are called transformers. They have an oil inside of them that keeps them from, like, overheating and exploding. You know what happens when you put a hole in the bottom of one? Like, with a rifle? It empties out. Kapusta. Boom. No more power for you. How many could one guy... You don't have to be a very good shot. They're pretty big. How many could one guy take out in a couple hours and then disappear? How many? Probably a lot. How many power substations are incredibly vulnerable to attack? I mean, a rented moving truck, no explosives. Just a brick on the gas. We have no plan for any of this. I'm not trying to scare you today. I'm just pointing out this is how... Absolutely, like, a guy like me can figure this out. You don't think people who actually want to do harm to other people can figure out a hell of a lot more on how to do it? Look what was done to our society with a virus that was basically a really bad cold for most people. How much disruption to our way of life did that cause? What do you think some of this shit would cause? Have you ever noticed that every time something bad happens, the solution your government has is to take away your liberty to protect you and how willing people are to let it happen? And Jeff is saying transformers plus just-in-time inventory equals a sad face. Indeed. Indeed. We don't have the transformers to replace a bunch of them being blown up or knocked down. Again, I'm not saying that this ship hitting this bridge was intentional. I honestly don't think it was. I'm not close to the idea, but I don't think it was. I think this is incompetence and failure at the same time. That's what I think happened. But boy, if you wanted to do it, now you know how to do it, don't you? Who would have thought that whole thing would have come down from a collision with one support that way? Probably people that are civil engineers that build bridges. Most of us wouldn't have thought that. Nobody listens to the civil engineers that build the bridges, by the way. They listen to the politician's uncle who has the construction company. That's who they listen to, because everybody likes to have their beak wet a little bit. Yeah. How many ways can our food supply be disrupted? I mean, these big macro things, sure, but just a few phone calls about poisoning a food supply that actually never happened. How much trouble would that cause? Let alone actually doing it. Our agricultural system's on the verge of collapse anyway. We're destroying our own ability to produce food as it is. And we just keep dumping more chemicals and plowing the fields harder and creating more compaction and more erosion and more self-fulfilling prophecies of drought and climate change, right? We just keep causing our own problems regionally that affect us nationally and globally. So there's incredible weakness to our food supply. And for you homesteaders, that includes your animals. There's a lot of homesteaders that really do now produce a lot of their own food, but one of their weak links is they still got to go to the feed store to feed the chickens or feed the sheep or feed the pigs or whatever it is. I'm not saying you need to get 100% self-sufficient, but you might want to start thinking about how you buy in your feed and buying in like 90 to 120 days at a shot. That's what we do. And when we get down to about 30 days, we rebuy in so that we don't end up in a situation where we can't get feed. And we augment feed with a lot of self-produced items as well. We have to think about this. Yeah. Kelly says the 2020 toilet paper panic will seem like a happy memory if grocery stores run out of food. Yeah, think about the COVID stuff. How many times did you walk into a grocery store while that shit was going on, especially in the beginning, and see just stuff wiped out? And what got wiped out? Vegetables, meat, and dry goods. Might be something to think about here. All right. Again, the ag system, I think we also have to realize we are on the verge of total ecosystem collapse in a lot of this country. We are 100% dependent on chemical inputs at this point. It takes time, in the best circumstances, to transition agricultural land into natural restorative systems. It takes time. if we have a crisis situation requiring it, like, oh, I don't know, we can't get fertilizer for some reason, then we don't have the time. That's why it should be being done now. We can't control what's being done nationally. All we can do is advocate and do what we can and affect what we can. But we can't continue going this way. Let's say that none of the shit that I'm talking about happens. None of it. We don't have 30 years of maintaining harvest sufficient to feed ourselves. We don't have it. It's not there. Not in the current system. Is that system going to change? There's days that I look at the work that are being done by good people, including in the system, like NRCS and what have you, and I think, yeah, we're on the right track. But then when I look at the scope and the scale, and I realize this dude doing 2,500 acres, what he's doing is amazing. But when you listen to that same guy say, you know, I've been doing this for 20 years. I make more money per acre than anybody else in my county, and I'm the only one in my county doing it. Then you start to see the scope of the problem is, or the scale of the problem is much bigger than people think. 100% much bigger than people think. How about our banking and finance systems at the moment? There's multiple vectors of attack to that, but if you're a foreign adversary and you're looking at the United States economy and you're a long-term thinker like China, do you really need to do anything at all right now? Or do you just need to sit back and just watch the catastrophe unfold? We owe $35 trillion, I think, now. Somebody can look up U.S. debt clock and see if we've turned that corner. I think we have from the 34 everybody's been saying, but I'm not sure. But if not, just give it a few minutes and we'll be there. We owe more money than exists. And we are continuously devaluing things. You have your own government telling to your face not to believe what you see. Right? If some of you may not remember, you're not old enough to have been paying attention back when the war on terror started after 9/11 and the U.S. invaded Iraq. But there was a dude running around with a beret on in Iraq. We called him Baghdad Bob. I don't remember his real name. And there's literally like a video of him going, "It is all Western lies. There are no tanks in Baghdad." And it was like an M1 driving over a building in the background while he said, it looks like an SNL skit, except it's real. That's your government right now. That's your current administration right now. There is no problem. You've got the media backing it up, telling people, actually, the economy's really great. Joe Biden's done a great job. You know, and they tell you things like, well, you were taught the word inflation by right-wing extremists. I think most people know what inflation is. I think people understand when their paycheck is the same or slightly larger, but it buys less. I think people understand that. I think the fact that you have to earn 70% more than you did 5 years ago to buy the same house. Let me say that. You have to earn 70% more than you did 5 years ago to buy the same house now. I think people understand how that works. And I think people are finally getting in touch with the concept that inflation is cumulative, like steps. And because we were climbing 4 steps a month last year, and now we're climbing 1 step a month this year, doesn't matter because all the steps we climbed in the past with prices going up didn't go back down. They say inflation's going down. That means it's growing more slowly than it was in the past. And I'm telling you, no one's going to fix this. If the orange pumpkin man rises again, he might make the country a little bit better. I actually believe that some of the policies that will be rolled out will be somewhat beneficial in the short to midterm. But it won't fix the macro problem. It's not going to fix the $34, $35, it'll be like $38 trillion of debt by the time he takes over. And he won't pay back down one penny of the debt. They reduce the deficit, and they say they're paying down the debt. If I have to explain that to you, you're not ready to understand it yet. You can look it up for yourself. So we have this massively weak banking and finance system. We just had another bank shit to bed last week in New York, I think it was. We've got lawfare going on. No matter how derogatory I am about the orange man, how much I insult him, because he really does say some stupid ass shit. That guy would probably be president right now if somebody else held onto his phone for him and had the send feature for Twitter back when he was president. That alone probably would have skated him out, even with the Democrats cheating. But he's not going to fix it. You can't fix a system that's this far gone. We're at peak fiat and peak empire. And when those two things collide, history has shown collapse is what's next. And Woodpecker says, if collapse is inevitable, is it better sooner or later? I guess it depends on how prepared you are for it. And I don't think any of us are as prepared as we think we are, including me. And you, it's not sooner or later. It's now. This is the collapse. You're living in it. It's impossible to see. I've said this before. The best analogy I have is like a Star Trek episode where the ship's like, we see another ship and we can't communicate with them. And they eventually realize, like, that's us. And they're like in some time distortion because they've entered the event horizon of a black hole. And everything seems normal. And you think you're on course, but you're really circling the drain and you're already in the hole. This is what an empire's collapse looks like. And then does the empire reconstitute in some new form, or does it go away and some other hegemony take over? I don't know. History says both are possibilities. But the first one's more likely. Historically, when most empires collapse, they do not reconstitute. I guess the closest thing to that in a major situation would have been the Empire of Rome breaking into two and then slowly whittling away on both sides. Who knows? That could be what happens here. There's a pretty, you know, for as much breakup as there is in West Coast, East Coast, there's a pretty good line that's mostly north-south that would form a pretty solid break of a divided empire. And then what would that look like? Probably bloody and disgusting and not what you think. Everybody that cheers it on. When you read about the American Revolution in high school, it gets condensed a great deal. And I'm even talking like 1970s, 1980s high school. A great deal. And you really, I know that as much as I thought I knew about history, it really never registered to me that like the American Revolution was like 8 years. In reality, it was like 8 years. And so we have this fantasy in our heads, because it's a coping mechanism for humans, that if there's this revolution and we're on the right side of it, everything will be hunky-dory. And we forget about the bleeding and the gnashing of teeth and the starvation and the destruction and all of that. So don't cheer it on. But I think we're in an inevitable point right now that somehow this empire deconstructs. My hope is that we can deconstruct the way the Soviet Empire did in the 80s. Kind of a peaceful, slow fall apart, but we'll see. I wouldn't get hung up on that being what's going to happen. Let's talk a little bit about cyber attacks. Cyber attacks. So whenever there's a cyber, it wasn't really China. It was the State Department. It wasn't really this part. It doesn't matter. I'm back to, if I'm in a building, I'm on the third floor, the fourth floor and the second floor are on fire, and you're standing next to me, and you're explaining to me who started the fire. I'm punching you in the mouth, throwing you out the window, and using your body to land on when I jump. I'm going to hang, so I'm only really coming down two floors, and I'm going to land on your ass. Right? You have now volunteered to be an airbag, if you're trying to tell me that while I'm stuck in a burning building. It doesn't matter. It matters that we had companies shut down from cyber attacks that had absolutely nothing to do with the functional mission of their business, because their accounting systems were attacked. Our accounting systems are attacked. We can't pump gas through a pipeline. How asinine is that? Right? And then held for ransom. But that was really the U.S. government. I don't care who did it. I care that you can do it. That we have not created systems of redundancy to the point where, hey, look, if our systems get hit, we have a walled-off duplicating system that's, let's say, X amount of days behind that at least will be functional, and you basically throw a cutover switch. Why don't we do that? It's too expensive. It's too expensive. It's too expensive to ensure that we can all continue to, like, live. Oh, okay. I get that. Joe says the blue states aren't going to let the red states go without a fight, but do they have any capability of fighting? What do you mean by fight? Right? I don't know. I think it depends on how. But definitely we are at vulnerable situations for cyber attacks. Our drinking water, our wastewater, our electrical systems, our critical infrastructure. It is totally possible. I'm not saying it happened. Please don't put words in my mouth. And some asshole is probably going to clip this out and say, Jack Spirko says it was a cyber attack. I'm not. I'm saying that it is totally possible that someone somewhere hacked into the navigation systems and the electrical systems of that container ship, because they are all networked, and somehow caused the accident. I don't think it's probable, but it's possible. Well, how many places could that be done? And the more self-driving, self-operating stuff we make, the more that becomes possible. How many soft targets are there for armed teams, bombs, arsonists? How many soft targets exist? The other thing is shopping malls. There's not a lot of shopping malls left as far as I know, but okay, shopping malls, parks. Like, and we can't just like close everything down like COVID and all run away and hide. But it might be nice if we had a better plan for what to do in those events. If we had more armed citizens would be one thing. Like, if I'm a bad guy and I want to kill a bunch of people, I'm probably heading to like New York City or Chicago. Why? Because they have aggressive gun control, and I'm not likely to get shot by a good guy. The bad guy with a gun who's also there is far more likely to just run away than return fire, unless I'm happen to shoot at him. I'm going to go to the place that you've locked out, you know, responsible gun owners from, because I don't want them there, even if I expect to die. You find this sick person, I want to do as much damage as I can before I die. I want to take out as many. But when you start looking at explosives, and for all the talk, you know, you watch these TV shows, all this bullshit, these freaking Gen Z idiots, Google shit, create characters out of thin air that bear no resemblance to reality. Like, hey, went to this school in Afghanistan to learn how to build an explosive. You can build bombs easy. Watch your shit explodes, and you put the right things together the right way, and kaboom. It's not hard. And there's so many places that we have soft targets. There's so many places. Schools are incredibly soft targets. As you know, sick, deranged people have shown that are angry at the school, so they go shoot a bunch of kids. That pales in comparison to what, let's say, a four-man team of properly trained, you know, to the point of being having combat experience could do. It's horrifying. And we have no plan. And we keep pissing off the whole world, and we keep screwing up our own country to where people are unhappy. Unhappy people are more likely to hurt other people than happy people. I don't know if you know that. We have some real problems here. And again, if we do have a soft target attack, what is the solution government always has? What was the solution on 9/11? Was it, hey, look, we screwed some things up here, right? And I know some of you, it was Dick Cheney. But what was the solution? Regardless of whether it was so they could implement that solution or it happened exactly the way they said, which I don't believe, regardless, what was the solution? That's the lesson. Well, you have to take your shoes off now when you get on an airplane. You have to take your belt off. We have to strip search an old lady in Depends because she might have a bomb in her ass. We need to redefine financial relationship to include a box that you keep shit in at a bank. We need to have 1099Ks on merchant accounts like PayPal, so that people aren't cheating on their taxes. That was part of the Patriot Act. Every single time these things happen, when it is, you know, at least suspected it was some foreign adversary, some terrorist, whatever, the solution is never to attack the people who use the vector to get to you. It's always to claim that the vector of attack is the justification to do all other kinds of shit to take liberty from people, which further pisses people off and leads to more potential for what the United States government would call domestic terrorism. Because, again, pissed off people are more likely to do harm than happy people. And there is a point that if you push anybody deep enough into a corner, it's like pushing a dog into the corner. The sweet little dog that you can pet that'll let you scratch its belly. If you abuse it enough and you push it in the corner far enough, it will eat your face off. And it does seem to me at times like our own institutions are attempting to do that to us, attempting to provoke us to violence. And it's why I'm so big on no violence. No violence. If you are going to go to war with an enemy, you identify your enemy's strength and weakness, and you attack from a vector that is most conducive to their weakness and least conducive to their strength. The number one strength that the state has is violence. So you have to use nonviolent vectors of attack against an enemy who excels at violence. All the state has is violence. The state is violence. The state is a club. The state is a gun. Everything the state does to control you, in the end, it is the gun, the men with guns, the force by proxy that makes whatever they say have teeth. What would have happened? Well, a little different way. What did happen during the COVID nonsense when certain store owners and county sheriffs and governors and everybody else in between that are the directors of the force by proxy said, yeah, we heard what you want us to do, and if people in our place want to do that, they can, but we're not doing anything. What happened in Houston when the Houston police chief said, when the mayor of Houston said, well, if you go into a store in Houston without a mask on, the police will arrest you. And everyone's like, what? And the police chief of the city of Houston said, yeah, we ain't got time for that. We ain't doing that. That's not our job. Go get screwed. What happened? Well, everybody did whatever they wanted to do. The only thing that gives the state power is the threat of violence. So you do not meet an enemy where the enemy is strong. You meet the enemy where the enemy is weak. You choose the method of attack, the time of the attack, and when the initiative is taken. They want it the other way around. And I see that the audio is glitchy from Kelly. There's nothing I can do. I'm sorry about that. Fortunately, I do record into two different devices, and the audio for the audio side will not have this, but I don't know what I can do to change that. I will try one thing real quick right now, and I will drop to a 480 on the resolution, and maybe that'll take less bandwidth, and maybe that'll be a little less glitchy. We'll see if that happens. I do see some flickering going on with the video there. This is the other thing. This nation has faced external threats in the past. Significant external threats in the past. We have faced significant tragedies in the past, at home and abroad. We have had all kinds of horrible things that we've had to stand against. We've done bad things, but we've also done good things as a country. And we've been through a lot of shit. And I would say as recently as a couple decades ago, we could make the claim that while we were not perfect, we were the greatest nation, not that was around, but that probably ever existed. For all our flaws, we could still say we were one of the greatest nations that ever existed. And there was one reason why. There was a certain level of national unity. I mean, if you go back to the 1940s and you look at how black Americans were treated in most of this country, it was as second-class citizens at best. It really was. Anybody tries to say that's not the case, you're just in denial of reality. You're absolutely in denial of reality. Now, some of those people would say the black community was stronger then than they are today. I would agree with you. Both of those things can be true. But yet, black men volunteered to fight in World War II. They weren't just drafted. They volunteered and then were segregated in service. But they still did it. How uniting did the overriding principle that it meant to be an American have to be to make a person willing to do that? Again, I'm not forgiving anything about how those men were treated. I'm saying that in spite of that treatment, they were willing to stand up and say, I'll go, I'll fight. Now, what do you think that looks like today? How many of these people with their little Ukraine flags that say they stand with Ukraine and they love Dr. Fauci on top of it and Putin is evil and anybody that says anything other than a narrative is a tool of Putin, how many of them do you think would respond to a draft notice? How many would respond? And it doesn't have to be a war. I'm just using that as an extreme example. I would tell you that I feel that there has never been a time in history where the people of this country are more divided than they are right now. And I've been around a while. I'm not a real old man yet, but I've been around a little while. I've been around over 5 decades. And with my memory and the way I pay attention, I remember 4 of them really well. 40 years without cracking a history book. I can say this is what I observed around me. I've never seen a time where being an American meant less to more people than it does today. Ever. Even like, you know, the hippies that took all the shit as draft dodgers and stuff in Vietnam, in the end, weren't they mostly right? And weren't they doing what they were doing because they believed America was better than it was behaving? They weren't out trashing America, they were trashing what their country was doing, and that's actually a form of patriotism, whether you like it or not. When you turn on yourself, you know you're seeing the symptom of the disease of rot that is the end of empire. And that's what I keep coming back to. That's where we are. And I do believe this is more by design than incompetence. In spite of the fact that I, you know, make fun of people, call them special learners, whatever, I really do. I don't think that the people with all the power are this incompetent consistently. I do think, but I think they're also incompetent that they think they can control this. That they think it will benefit them in the end, because it always has. We're at a point now where we have had multi-generations of top-level grifters of the system. And they have been born into this life of, I'll use the word, privilege. And when I say privilege, I'm not talking about, oh, nobody pulled you over because of the color of your skin. No, when I say privilege, I mean being born into a world where you can have anything you want from the time you're old enough to understand what that means until you die. That's what I mean. Whether you work or not, whether you do something or not, your family, your place in the world, you have so much just by being born that you never have to actually worry about anything in your life. And that was true for your dad and your grandpa and your great-grandpa and maybe even before that. So when somebody tells you, hey, if you keep doing this, everything's going to fall apart, it's a very natural reaction for people like that to say, yeah, but it won't affect me. I have 3 passports. I have a Swiss bank account, right? I can travel. I can go. I'll just, like Jim Rogers, I'll learn, you know, Chinese and move to China or whatever and think it's all going to be okay. There is no one in the world that will not suffer the consequences of the United States collapse, even if it needs to happen, especially if it happens in the worst way possible, which it could. And by the way, we're just provoking like the other 2 major nuclear powers toward World War III while all this is going on. That's great. That's good. Kelly says the airports won't be open. They have private planes, dude. Right? There is some truth to what they're saying. That's why they believe it. Doesn't mean it'll work out in the end, but there is some truth to it. They live in a different world than we do. And that makes them think they have a right to control ours. I do think that's part of this. But I also think there's a tremendous amount of incompetence in this. There's a tremendous amount of incompetence. Anybody, anywhere who's being honest, even if you hate the right and you love the left, if you're being intellectually honest, if you have the intellectual capability of understanding the question, right? If you're not dumber than the person I'm about to invoke, then you're going to answer this with that person's incompetent. Does anybody really believe Kamala Harris is competent to be the vice president of the United States of America? I don't believe any, including the people that tell you how great she is on TV. I don't believe they believe it, right? When a lifeguard on, what was that show with the chicks running in the red swimsuits, Baywatch? When a lifeguard was talking about how to disarm a bomb on the beach, not only does no lifeguard know how to do that, that actor doesn't either. They're just reading a script. And Kelly says VP maybe, president definitely not. No, you have to be capable of being president to effectively be vice president, right? Like, and how about AOC? Is AOC intellectually competent as a human being to serve in the United States Congress? Like, we have these intellectual midgets that actually have power. By the way, that's another sign that you've reached the edge of the end of empire. When you start, how many people can you point out, regardless of politics, regardless of political spectrum, that you're just like, this person is not smart. This person is stupid. How about Maxine Waters? How does a person like that stay in a position of power for decades? Because the populace that elects them is stupid too. That's why. That's why there's more stupid people on the left politically than the right. Right? But what I honestly believe is you have more malice on the right at the same time at the upper level of politics. Absolutely. But all these people are incompetent idiots. And back to what I said earlier about the bridge, when we have these problems, when we have these infrastructure failures, when these bridges collapse, whether a boat slams into them or we just didn't take care of them, I mean, think about this. The interstate highway system, conceived by Dwight Eisenhower after he saw what Germany had done with the Autobahn, was initiated and funded in the 1950s. Okay? And they started building it in the 1950s. It was planned from the beginning that by the mid to late 70s, most of what had been built would need to be upgraded or replaced. Most of it has barely been touched since it was built. The technical last piece of the interstate highway system was finished, I believe, in 1991. You can look me up and fact check me on that, but that's what's in my brain. 1991. Okay, 1991 doesn't sound that long ago, but that's a little while ago. But the funding on the initial funding of the highway system ran out in the early 70s. A lot of the bridges that you're driving over, overpasses you're driving over, highways that you're driving on now are 50, 60 years old, and they've had almost no real maintenance done on them. Filling a pothole in is not maintenance. You know, I-20 that goes, well, across half the damn country, but the part I'm talking about through, like, Grand Prairie, Texas, there was about 6 miles of it about 15 years ago. They literally had to block the highway off and route traffic around it on the one side, drill holes in it, and pump concrete under it because it was sinking. But it took until the whole freaking 6-lane highway was sinking before somebody said, oh, I guess we should do something about this. How long does it take? How long do you think that bridge is going to take to replace? So if there was a coordinated attack that took out key infrastructure, let's say 20 pieces of key infrastructure, how many years is this country set back before we can fix it? Because everything we do has to go to 300 agencies to decide if it's safe, if it's going to impact the habitat of the striped-tailed foofy flu, or who the fuck knows what. We can't do anything with any impetus and speed in this country. We are headed for a complete collapse of our ability to produce energy. Because we're not building any energy systems. We're not building new systems. We keep, you know, adding wind and sun, but it doesn't work all the time. I'm sorry. And we're not maintaining the gas and coal energy production facilities that we already have. And as we bring up more and more fossil fuel, the goal is to shut these down. Don't shut them down, morons. You don't have enough power generation. As much as I love living in Texas, one of our problems is we are better than most of the other states. We have plenty of problems, but we're better than most of the states. So what do we have? We have a massive influx of people coming here. We're not building more power generation. And every time we try, lunatics get in the way of it. What we should be building right now? Nuclear power. I know some of you don't want to hear that. It doesn't make it not true just because you don't want to hear it. And you don't know anything. The people opposed to this know nothing about modern nuclear power. We have aircraft carriers with nuclear reactors on them. We have aircraft carriers who are the first thing that we send into a disaster in another country, because that ship can pull in deep water off coast, run lines to shore, and power half a city from the freaking reactor on the aircraft carrier. And pump in thousands upon thousands of gallons a day of fresh water, converted seawater into fresh water, using that power. But we can't build them here. Do you see how stupid that is? And all of the fear-mongering about nuclear power is based on nuclear power development 50s, 60s, early 70s. It's been a while. We have things called, we have thorium reactors now. There's no meltdown. There's no Fukushima with a thorium reactor. If it shuts down, it just stops. It produces almost, not none, but almost no heavy waste. And even old school reactors, the amount of waste they produce is so small compared to what they do. It's ridiculous. But we don't want to do that. But even if we did, let's say tomorrow morning, that we just got rid of all the imbeciles in our government. And I don't just mean the imbeciles that vote on the House floor. I don't just mean the imbecile that occupies the White House. Let's say we replace them, even if they had some ideological differences, that the goal of the United States Congress and the executive branch became to do what is best for America like that. Like it ain't going to happen. Like magic tomorrow. And you cleared out massive amounts of bureaucracy that gets in the way of it. There's still a little bit. How long would it take to build 30 thorium nuclear reactors in the country? 50 years? In the best case scenario we could hope for. So it's not coming anytime soon. Texas is doing jack shit to deal with these people coming in. It's one of the things I am concerned about. And the last thing with our infrastructure, let's say nobody does anything. It's still falling apart. A lot of it's still 60, 70 years old. Tons of it is 30 to 40 years old. It was designed to last for 25 years. We have no plan to fix it. And what does it cost to fix it? A road that cost us $10 million, like a stretch of road that was a $10 million project in 1980, is probably a $1 billion project today. A billion with a B. That's 1,000 million. You talk about inflation, and when you go back and you show people what inflation looks like from 1971 to today, they think about what? Their groceries, their rent, the cost of mortgaging, the cost of educating a kid in college. That's what people nab, because that's the bill you pay. You don't realize that, you know, 6,200% increase in cost applies to roads, bridges, buildings, electrical infrastructure, water infrastructure, sewage infrastructure, all of it. All those people that do all those jobs that are really important, they have been subject to the same inflation you have, and they require a wage commensurate with the ability to live their life too. And many of them work for government or government adjunct, and they're paid better than you are. Their compensation going up relative to inflation is better than yours. That's why those people tend to vote Democrat, because they're insulated more than you are. Right? But where is the money going to come from to fix all this infrastructure? And the answer is we don't have it. And we're not going to have it. And we build everything with a life expectancy today between 2 and 20 years. The houses that when they, you know, construction starts at an all-time low, if we don't count multi-tenant, which is mostly housing projects that are trying to move everybody to high density. But even when we are building new houses, what do? Most new houses are built in brand new subdivisions. They're not custom-built one-offs, right? The developer buys 40 acres and puts in, you know, 100 houses or more, depending on how close they can stack them together, room for cul-de-sacs and all that, right? And they build the houses, and that whole subdivision is built out in 2 to 3 to 4 years. They put up signs, they get salespeople in, and they put people in them as quick as they can. It's all stick and brick, it's all 2x4s in the walls, it's all nail guns, it's all incredibly industrial assembly line type building. The guy that does the drywall doesn't know anything about framing. The guy that does the framing doesn't know anything about drywall. The guy that pours the slab, he just pours it into forms and goes away. The plumber, like, it's all compartmentalized. And it's all done for maximum profit, quickest build, and fastest overturn. And a lot of people would say, well, Jack, what do you want it to take 2 years for somebody to build a house? I don't want it to take 2 years, but maybe it does to build it right. Because what then happens? We talk about infrastructure like our roads and our bridges and things like that, our communications and all the other stuff. What about the infrastructure that is our subdivisions? Do you know what happens when you build all the houses within a couple of years of each other and you build them with the cheapest, fastest way possible? They last about 10 to 20 years before they start to fall apart. So since they were all built at the same time, they all do what at the same time? Start to fall apart. Now, when you have people living them who have gotten by and feel very fortunate that they bought that house 10, 15 years ago, but the house starts falling apart, and the reason they've gotten by up till now is their cost of living has been lower than the person that bought a house yesterday. But it's all at the same time. That whole neighborhood starts to go to shit. It's a consequence that we never considered when we started really building out the suburbs in the 50s. Build the house as quick as you can, as cheap as you can, as fast as you can, sell it as quick as you can, turn it over and go do another, screw off. Like the developer's like, I already built that one. We'll use that to make pictures for the next brochure. And they never look back at it ever again. And at least in the 50s when you built a house like that, it was probably in pretty good shape up till about 1975, 1980. But the houses that we built in 1995 are literally falling apart at this point. And they're all falling apart at the same time. All at the same time. And we have run out of ways to prop that up. And then the cost of building new has gotten ridiculous. The cost of repair has gotten ridiculous. We have places now, people go to remodel a house. They have to have the department of making you sad come sign off on a house. The inspector comes in and goes, there's 4 windows on this wall of the house. Yeah, so, well, the new fire code says there can only be 3 because the other house is this close because it's a fire spread risk. Wait a minute. This house has been here since 1961. Yep. And if I don't remodel it, that's okay. Yep. But if I remodel it, I have to get rid of that window. Yep, with a straight face. This is the idiocracy we live in. What are you going to do? I'm going to go quick with it because we went longer than I planned. Here we go. Number one, there is no political will to fix this. You think I'm still on the problem? No. Part of the solution is you need to accept this. You need to accept the fact that there is nobody coming to fix this, because even if somebody wants to, it cannot be done in the current system that we're in. This is a system that has to literally be rebuilt. You have to rebuild the system before you can fix the problem that the existing system created. We need a new system. It's not happening anytime soon. Nobody has the political will who's going to have any power or any authority at all, let alone a consortium of enough people to tell you the truth. They'll tell you stupid shit like you'll own nothing and be happy, but they will not tell you, hey, you know, guys, in 1971, we had already fucked up in 1913, but we totally fucked it up, and we need to go back to a hard money system. It's really going to suck. But it's what we have to do for future generations. They don't have the courage to tell you that. They don't have the courage to tell you that. So it has to collapse. And when you accept it, then you will stop wasting your time and your attention on other things. I recently talked about this on X and on Noster, and one of the two, somebody asked me, can you tear down the existing system while you build a new one? I quoted Buckminster Fuller, who said, I'm paraphrasing, but basically you do not fix a broken system by trying to fix it. You fix a broken system by creating a new system that obsoletes the former system. And the person said, well, why not both? Like the little Taco Bell girl, right? Yay, why not both? We'll have soft and crispy tacos. You can do soft and crispy tacos. Pretty simple to skin for now. unless you live in Baltimore and you can't get them on a ship anymore. But when you're talking about a much bigger thing, you're either going to build a new system to feed yourself with, or you're going to work on correcting the system that's flawed. A man cannot serve two masters. You only have so much dash. You only have so much energy. You only have so much time. You only have so much money. You have only so much influence. You have to focus on what you can do versus what makes you feel good about pretending to do something. So that's the first step. Next, you must prepare to do out systems of support. That's the same thing we've been teaching for 16 years. Prepare to not be able to go to the grocery store for a few weeks. Prepare to go to the grocery store for the next few weeks and only 5% of what you expect to see is even there. Prepare to do without, or better yet, prepare to not have to do without when people are doing without. Basic preparedness. You've got to do it, and you have to get off of, I'm preparing for a cybersecurity attack, right? I'm preparing for the next pandemic. I'm preparing for, World War III, whatever. You are not preparing for any of that bullshit if you're actually preparing. You're preparing for food not to be routinely available from the store in the quantities that you're used to. You're preparing to turn the spigot on and water not to come out of it. That's what you're preparing for. You're preparing to not be able to go to work because people are burning down the building you work in. Why doesn't matter to you in the real world? I promise you, it's so easy to think what's important is who's really responsible when you're sitting here looking at a screen and the thing that's happening is in Moscow. Right? It's very easy to be in that compartmentalized state and go, oh, but what's really important is this guy who worked for this guy did it because he's a CIA asset. Right? When you're the one with shit blowing up around you, I promise you, you will not care. You will worry about you. So that's what you need to do now, is be prepared to do without the systems of support that you're used to. It doesn't mean run away and hide, but it does mean, well, we'll get to that. Get the hell away from the Flashpoint cities. I can't say it much more. I've said it, and I will only say this to you now. 3 years ago, when I was saying this, I was saying the opportunity was closing, and no matter how hard I tried to explain what I meant by that, there were people that made it out that I was literally saying, if you live in Los Angeles 3 years from now, you're going to be dead and hanging from a lamppost. That the whole place would be leveled and burned to the ground. Or something to that effect. Right? The cops would all be wearing swastikas and rounding people up and throwing them in camps. That's what I was saying. That's not what I was saying. I was saying the conditions there, the quality of life there, and the cost of existence there will continue to decline. And your exit strategy will become more and more difficult to pull off. You tell me, with that one little factoid I gave you, 3-4 years ago, you could have earned 70% less money and bought the same house you could today with the income 70% more. Is getting out of Los Angeles, San Francisco, Portland, Oregon, Seattle, Washington, Chicago, Illinois, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, is it easier or harder today than it was 3 and 4 years ago when I was screaming at you, get out, get out, get out? It's hard. Okay. With that track record, I would just like to make a statement right now. In 5 years, it will be harder than it is right now. The number of suitable properties that are outside of these systems of control, where you can have life basically to yourself, even if a lot of shit around you melts down, that inventory is in decline and the cost is in rise. And if you want out, then now is the time. 5 years ago was the time, but you don't have a time machine. If I had a time machine, I would probably go back to like 1980. For all the problems we had in the 80s, life was just better. And like, I would live, the last 40 years of my life from like 1980 to what, 2020? No, wait a minute. No. Hey, scratch that. I'm going back to 1970 so I check out before all this shit happens. But you don't have a time machine. What you have is time. And time is an erosion-based commodity. None of us live forever. And the older you get, the more in touch with that you'll get. Get out of the flashpoint cities if you haven't already. If you're living in Los Angeles right now, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, I really don't. If you're living in San Francisco, I don't know what to tell you. And people say, well, I have a business. Then you know what? You had more opportunity to get out than a person with a job. If you know how to run a business, you can move a business. Whether it's a giant business like Tesla or a little bitty business like Bob's Tire Shop, you can move a business. You can move a business. You still, it's easier for a business owner to get out. And you can say what you want about family and all, and I get that. I understand, and I'm not telling you that you have to. I'm telling you that the opportunity to leave is shrinking and becoming more difficult to execute. And you may really wish you had figured a way out in a couple years. And many of you wish you had figured a way out 3 or 4 years ago when you could have, but you didn't. So I'm not being smug here. I'm just saying this is reality. And you need somebody to be honest with you and give you reality, because a fucking TV set and the radio and most alternative media is not going to do it. They're not going to give you reality. They'll give you their side of things, their agenda, what they want to push to sell their bullshit. I just tell you the way I see things. I call balls and strikes when I can. You need to have backup power for at least a few weeks' time, 2 to 3 weeks. If that's a generator and a couple hundred gallons of gasoline, fine. Fine. If you can go all the way off grid, even better. But you have got to have backup power, because that chest freezer you have full of meat, what good is it when it all rots? And boy, let me tell you, having had a freezer go bad in my life, ugh, boy, you don't want to deal with it. And even if you run out of backup power, having that time would let you enact other preservation methods so you don't lose everything that you have. You've got to have backup power. You need a means of defense. You need a means of defense. Shit starts going really sideways. I mean, even during COVID, there were people starting to get, like, their groceries jacked in parking lots. Honestly, we came a lot closer to craning over a hill during that than I think a lot of people realize. There were some places things were starting to get really dangerous. They didn't get that dangerous, but you could see, this is the thing. Because we have been seduced in the prepper space by prepper porn, we think light switch. Everything's good one day, click, everything's on fire, everything's collapsing, there's no electrical grid anymore, they turned off the internet, the Belgians are going to gas us, whatever bullshit you read in a book, right? And it happens like that. We, as an empire, are experiencing the slow turning of a dimmer switch leading to darkness. Right? One of my good friends in this space, Vin Armani, I guess he calls himself something else now, the artist formerly known as Vin Armani or whatever. You know, he used to call this thing that we're going through the dim age, and he meant it differently. But I think that's a perfect description when you look at it this way. We're like the dimmer age. Everything that should be advancing is failing. At least at like the national and global level, government level. There's plenty to be excited about. There's plenty of great things, great innovations happening, but they're being done by individuals in spite of government, not being enabled or empowered by government. It is the dimmer age, and it is the dimmer switch. That's what I'm saying there. Oh, he says jinx, so he must be a little behind me. But you need a means of defense, because when shit gets in short supply, people start stealing, and people start threatening lives, and then there's just a segment of society that they're like, oh, I can get away with raping people now. I'm going to go rape some people. Like, I know if you are a decent human being, that is hard to get your head around. That there are people that have never done anything like that because they simply fear what will happen if they do. But if you pull away the risk side of the risk-reward ratio, they'll just go kill people, they'll rape people, they'll steal kids, they'll burn down houses. If you doubt it, you didn't pay attention during the BLM riots, because a lot of that shit happened. A lot of that shit. And just remember, whatever you heard was vastly underreported, yes, even by Newsmax and Fox. There were horrible things that went on with that, and it was a microcosm of what could happen. You need a means of defense, and you need to know your effing neighbors. You need to know your neighbors and who you can count on and who you need to be like if shit starts going sideways. That motherfucker over there, we need to keep our eye on his ass. If you have a problem person in your neighborhood, I'm not saying to do anything. I'm saying know that they will be a problem before they become one so that you're aware. Know your neighbors for both good and bad alike. Grow your own food and have a means to see to your own fertility. There are so many homesteaders that are still out there throwing Miracle-Gro and 10-10-10 on their garden. And if you're down to you're relying on your food, that shit ain't going to cut it. And changing then will be harder than changing now, just like moving. Learn how to make good compost. Learn all the stuff that I teach. Whether you learn it from me directly or indirectly, I don't care. But learn how to use nature to feed yourself. Learn where you can forage, where you can gather fish. I mean, all the stuff that we talk about. Learn it now because it will not be as easy as it is right now later. I know some of you have a hard time believing that, but I'm telling you. And protect your wealth. And this is why I piss some people off. That means Bitcoin, yes. No, they're not going to shut the internet off. They're just going to shut the internet off. Oh. My brain hurts when you say that because the entire means of control for these people is networks. They need it for their own shit. They're not going to shut the internet off to get rid of Bitcoin. They're not. It's a stupid statement. But if you don't want Bitcoin, fine. Silver and gold would be other places you can put your money. I don't think it's as smart. I don't think it's as good of a long-term play. But absolutely have some form of hard money and a portfolio of mix is better to do. Yeah? All you people that think you're going to shut the internet off, I think you are mentally damaged. You are looking for an excuse to not do a thing. You're no different than the person when I say you need a garden says, yeah, but when the shit is the fan, the people will just steal all my food. Just say you don't want a garden. Don't make up bullshit about zombies stealing your tomatoes. Just say you don't want to do Bitcoin. Say you don't understand it and you don't care to learn and you think we're all stupid. And now I'm good with all of that. When you start saying stupid shit like they're going to ban it, it's going to go to zero, they're going to turn off the internet, then I don't have any time for you anymore. But I'm going to still, I still care about you. Then you better have silver or gold or a mix. Or if you're smart, you have all three. Because, I don't know, maybe the sun gets really angry one day, farts out a giant CME, and we don't have an internet for a while. I don't know. I doubt it. But, I mean, there's always the extreme example, and we should prepare for all of the eventual realities, not just for the one that you've convinced yourself is going to happen. That's asinine. That's almost worse than not prepping at all. Because if you're wrong, you're wrong all the way through. But other things are important as far as protecting your wealth. Your knowledge is your wealth. Your tools. Property that you can control. Knowledge of your surroundings. You have to invest in your overall wealth. Next, you, in the end, need to accept you're living at the end of an empire. You're living at the end of an empire. All you need to do is crack a couple history books and look at past empires. And use that skill that we talk about all the time, pattern recognition. Pattern recognition. If you look at pattern recognition, and you look at empires in the past, and you look at this country right now, and the behaviors that it engages in, extending beyond its actual ability to control things, with a false belief that just because it has big boats and bombs, it can tell every nation everywhere what to do, and it can extend its resources out, and it can fund other countries' wars while it can't keep its own bridges up. If you look at anything approaching a fundamental reality of past empire collapse, and you look at this, you have to have an IQ of like 13 to not see. This is what it looks like. And again, the important part of that is acceptance. Then you will stop wasting your time with shit you don't control. You'll stop caring what Laura Ingraham or Sean Hannity said, or Rachel Maddow, or whoever's left over there, I guess the dwarf troll is gone or whatever. I don't know who the hell's on the other sides, right? Joy Behar, right? Like, if you're worried about what any of these talking heads are saying, you're not worried about the things that actually impact your life. Those people have a job. It is the same job. I know Joy Behar in your head. This is going to be hard to get your head around. You go see the magician. They bring out the really pretty girl. You know why they don't bring out the really handsome guy as an assistant? It's not sexism. It's fundamental biology. When you put the really pretty girl there, what do all the guys do? Oh, look at the pretty girl. What do all the women do? They look at the pretty girl, right? It's, you know, it works. So they bring the really, really pretty girl out. She's kind of scantily dressed, and she does her thing. And the magician slips something by you. You don't see because you took your eye off when she did something at just the right moment, and they knew that that's where your attention would go. Yeah? That's attention goes, energy flows. And then, ta-da! He appears with a white tiger in a cage hanging from the roof. Wow, how'd it happen? It's a trick. But the trick was contingent upon the attractive blonde girl in the scantily clad outfit that you all looked at. Again, I know Joy Behar, compared to that, it's hard. But it's to make you angry. It's to make you revolted. It's to make you pissed off. When you have these people even in government, like Elizabeth Warren, what is Elizabeth Warren's purpose? Right? And she's easy to kick and easy to beat up about the fake Indian shit all, but no, I don't mean it that way. I mean, you've read Illuminatus trilogy. You realize there's a very small number of people actually pulling the strings. If you're one of them, what is the purpose of an Elizabeth Warren? What is the purpose of an Elizabeth Warren if you're that group of people? Is it to get laws passed? Well, let's see. She's been in office for like 20-something years and has never passed a bill that she introduced. So that can't be it. That can't be it. She is a left-wing socialist lunatic from a state that loves left-wing socialist lunatics. She is in a Senate seat that if my dog ran as a Democrat, he would win. If a dead man ran as a Democrat, they would win. She's safe. So what do you do with that person? She's not articulate. She doesn't make any sense, but she can speak to young people because they're not articulate and they don't make any sense. And they've been conditioned to believe socialist bullshit. She is a misdirection. She's to get you to pay attention over here while something's happening over there. That's her purpose. All the people on the TV, that's their purpose, including the ones, yes, you like. Their purpose within the program system, even if they're genuine, all the means of communications, save a few, are completely controlled. Why do you think I tell you to get your ass on Noster, right? I'll put up my information on that for you right now. And by the way, I now have the ability, if you want an Albi wallet, and you don't have one yet, and you need an invite code, so you want to manage your Noster keys and be able to exchange Bitcoin with people using Lightning in your browser where they can't prevent you from doing it because it's just the website, yeah, I can generate one of those codes for you so that you can join. So email me, jack@thesurvivalpodcast.com, if you want access to that. I'm not going to push that really hard, but as I say, they're controlling the speech, they're controlling the information, they're controlling the flow of information. Then the only solution is to go where they don't. Because I've been seeing a lot of people talk about how X is all about free speech. Let me explain X to you in a way that'll make perfect sense about why this is bullshit. 2008, I was told you need to be on Twitter if you're going to be a podcaster, so I got on Twitter. I grew to like 9,000 followers almost instantly, and then my growth went to shit. I got shadow banned. I started hearing from people, I don't see anything about you anymore. And I'm like, I post stuff there every day. I don't understand. And then it took years to go from about 9,000 to about 15,000. Years. The day Elon closed the deal, I started growing, and I grew from like 15,000 to almost 20,000 in a few months. I started growing by hundreds a day as soon as the shadow ban was turned off. Well, then he hired Linda Yaccarino, who said, and I quote, "It's WF puppet too. Freedom of speech doesn't equal freedom of reach." And my growth went back to shit. March 13th last year, so just over 1 year, I signed up on Nostr. I have 25,000 followers on Nostr, which is a network, a fraction of a fraction of a fraction, the size of the network that is X Twitter. So don't tell me it's free speech. Because one of the things that have been used to control you is the belief that free speech is a right to speak. It is not just a right to speak. Some would say it's a right to be heard. You do not have a right to be heard. You do not. And that's where Yak is saying freedom of speech doesn't equal freedom of reach. The way, see, little subtle changes in language, why do you think it's so important to government to dominate and control what words mean? Why do you think the left has convinced half of the country that bloodbath never applies to financial situations, only to killing people? Because controlling language is controlling minds. So not only for free speech to exist do I have to have the right to speak, it's not that I have the right to be heard, it's that you have the right to hear. And that subtle difference is so much. Look, Mick had it before I said it. It's the right to hear. If I have the right to speak, it means nothing if you don't have the right to hear me if you choose to listen. That is how we are controlled, and we need to get the hell out of this. And I know that learning new things can be a problematic pain in the ass for people, but you don't have a choice. You're going to need to be able to communicate free of their control, and believe it or not, Nostr does that. So that's my little pitch for Nostr here at the end. Real quick, I want to remind you guys, if you like the show and the work that I do, there's a lot of ways that you can support it. I believe that the type of content we put out, whether it's somewhat political and somewhat heated like today, which is when all of you show up, by the way, or whether it's yesterday where we got down and dirty for real with gardening and the practical skills and how to do them, that both of those things are needed today. And it needs to be done in a way like I do it. I literally do not give a fuck about getting canceled. I don't anymore. I don't care. I've done enough for myself that I'm going to be okay no matter what. There is nothing to threaten me with. And part of that is because I have people like you who believe in what I do, who will exchange value with me. I'm not PBS. I don't ask for free money. I don't ask for donations. I say if I provide something you see value in and you want to pay for it, you decide what that's worth. I also say, hey, I have these other things and this is how much they cost. And one is member support brigade. It's $50 a year. If you use cannabis products, I guarantee you get your money back. There's 70 other things. There's tactical, practical, garden, guns, you name it. Like, we have discounts on everything. We have discounts on anything I can think of in the prepper space. I've gone out and negotiated those discounts for you. I'm just saying, if you use cannabis products, it's already done. It's there. You're going to get your money back in one order. And so it's an easy thing to do. So consider becoming a member, because that is the number one way that we pay the bills around here. The other thing I'll tell you is we do have the courses we're building. And, you know, one of the courses the course that's the primary one that's out right now is the Bioreactor Compost course. And I really recommend that you check it out if you haven't yet. Homefoodsystems.com, $40, $35 for MSB members. There's $500 back if you're an MSB member right there. One of our sponsors today, by the way, Start9, 9% off of Start9 server. That'll cover it for like 2 to 3 years, depending on what box you buy. But definitely consider learning how to make the best compost in the world. This is going to be a skill. Learn how to make compost, and I'm not shitting you here. This is the truth. A 1 gallon bag of my compost is more valuable to your garden than 2 wheelbarrow loads of any commercially produced compost you can get your hands on. A 1 gallon bag, you can fertilize your garden for a season with the kind of compost I'll teach you how to make. So what's that worth? Consider becoming a member. Again, value for value. And next up is, whenever you're going to shop online, if you go to tspaz.com first, no matter what you buy, you help me out in the work that I do so I can keep doing things like this. You have two options there. You can shop the Vivor store. You can shop the Amazon store. But the product I have for you today is the same one I had yesterday, the AccuSlim sous vide cooker from the same people that make the Instapot, right? If you've never tried sous vide cooking, I really recommend that you do. This thing's on sale for $75. It goes on sale here and there. Usually it's a couple, 3 days that it stays on sale. It's normally $100. That's $25 you don't have to pay to get into sous vide cooking. And if you think it's only about making steaks, read the write-up. There's a link in the video notes below. And there's a lot you can do with sous vide beyond just making steaks. Like, so many things you can do. But here's one of my favorite, and it is making steaks. I'll take like a half a strip loin or a half of a rib loin or any large cut of meat that you can cut steaks out of. I'll season it up. I'll throw it in a sous vide circulator on like 135 degrees for like 4 hours. And then I'll take it out and I'll throw it in the refrigerator. And when I want a steak, I open the bag, slide it out, I cut a 1-inch piece of steak, and I heat it up in the pan. That sears it. And I just never bring it up to high enough temperature to cook it more. And I have instant steaks. I have instant steaks. Instead of Steak'em instant steaks, the little piles of crap that they tell you are a Philly cheesesteak. That's not a Philly cheesesteak, by the way. No, I have instant actual, like, ribeyes. And I can even make two and cook one at a higher temperature, and I can have steak for me, steak for my wife. Or another way I do it, I cut myself a 1-inch piece, and she wants a 1-inch steak. I cut her 2 half-inch ones. Throw them in the pan to sear them off, and hers end up, you know, medium well, and mine still are nice and rare. That's just one thing. You can make yogurt. You can make egg bites. You can make creme freaking brulee. If you really... Mr. Fixie says, they still make Steak'em? I would imagine they do. It's one of the most horrible things ever created. If you want real minute steaks... What you want is a good piece of meat, and you don't need a super high quality, like bottom round or top round. You get yourself a meat slicer. Vivor makes a great one, by the way. You get yourself a meat slicer, and you throw that big roast in the freezer till it's almost frozen, and then you put it in the meat slicer, and there's your minute steaks. That's how actual cheesesteaks were made in Philadelphia for years before that frozen crap came out. Anyway, with that little piece of information there at the end that you didn't know, Steak'em is like ground lips and sphincters. Yeah, probably. Anyway, with that, guys, I hope you enjoyed it. Tomorrow we'll have an interview show, and this should be a good one. I'm going to have Matthew Focus on, and we are going to be talking about concealed carry considerations. That will dovetail nice with this, so check us out tomorrow. Take care, guys. I will catch you with another one tomorrow morning, or tomorrow afternoon. Are they going to bail you out, or just run you around? They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar